May 20th, Palo Alto. I'm here with Brad Templeton. Brad is Canadian, the chairman of the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and an old internet entrepreneur. Brad is one of the people I really appreciate for his depth of his thoughts on privacy. So actually, why do you care about privacy?
Well, a lot of people have started saying that they think privacy is dead and we should get over it, or that the young generation has no sense of privacy and why should we worry about it. But the truth is that maybe we're getting a little bit complacent in our free society. The truth is that free societies are really just a few staccato notes and a many thousand year long chorus of police states. And people think that you're wearing a tinfoil hat when you're worried about a police state, but there still are a lot of them in the world. But even here in free countries, it's amazing what can happen to you when people don't understand what the value of private data. When people feel they're being watched, they're not as free. If you're a student, you probably remember when you first went off to college. And when you were away from home and your parents weren't watching you, that there was a liberating sense about that. And I bet when you went home for your first Thanksgiving dinner with your mother, you didn't feel as free. So when you're watched, you sense it yourself. And it removes the edges from society, the places where things boil up, the places where new ideas come from. This is always not from the mainstream, not from the center, but always from the edge, the people who are under the scrutiny of the mainstream and who need privacy so that they can be different. And if they feel they're being watched, they'll center themselves.
Okay, so that is privacy basically as an enabler of creativity. Now, I remember almost a decade ago with a friend of mine at a startup looking at search logs of a major search company. And how shocked we were just how much we learned about those individuals. Now, how is it possible that people consider the search engines as boxes which they can deeply trust, probably trust more than they would trust their physician or any other people who are very, very close to? How is it possible that people have this deep trusting relationship with companies they know very little about?
Well, I call that phenomenon urbanimity. It's the idea that when you're in a big crowd, you're safe because no one's going to care about the individual things you do. What falls in the face of that, unfortunately, is the fact that computers make everything scale. I often think that almost all computer issues are actually about scalability. Computers make good things scalable, like publishing and saving the world, but they make bad things scalable, like finding data in large seas. So people who've studied data mining know by now that computers can look for anything and look for a small thing. But yeah, I've typed in every drug that I'm prescribed, or maybe some I'm not prescribed, into Google. They do have that record, my medical history. There's a lot of things I wouldn't want other people to know. We are just trusting companies like Google, but we can't always be sure of how things are going to turn in the future. You know, I sometimes say that the sins of today may not be sins in the future, but there are things that will be sins in the future that are not sins now. This has been true for every generation. So you may decide later on that you had to watch what you did.
So do you think that most people actually know what they're doing right now, that there could be consequences for them in the future, or do you think they don't even consider it? For instance, if you think about Facebook, you said that Facebook has actually changed the balance of privacy. Actually, what did you mean by that?
Well, that's right, because the history of society and the history of privacy is that some of the stuff we do has been private or anonymous, and some has been public and disclosed. And that balance has worked fairly well in building a free and innovative society, the kind of society we like to live in. But there's no question that with internet technologies and Facebook and all these other things, that there's more recording going on of what we do, there's more association of our identity to what we do. And if that balance shifts, it's going to have an effect on civil rights and on privacy. The old days, when you wanted to use a website, a new cool website, you went to it and you didn't have to tell it very much to get it going because they didn't want to put any barriers in the way of you becoming a user. Now, Facebook has something they call applications, and it's really a misnomer. They're not applications. What they are is other companies that are building a small piece of the Facebook page. They're really other websites. But now, in order to use them, you have to leave checked a box that says, tell it everything about me, tell it about all my friends. So we've changed this balance from using the web without what we do being recorded and associated with us to having every cool new, quote, application, unquote, know everything. And I'm worried that that's going to mean a real shift in what's recorded with some negative consequences.
One of the problem sets in my Stanford class was to look at the half terabyte of data, Friends for Sale, one of the popular Facebook apps, where you can own somebody, here with your pet, and you can make them do things, actually were mined by the students. And it was very interesting. I asked students, you formulate the questions you have towards the database, and then this week afterwards you find the answers. And it was interesting that lots of these questions were about gender and about what people make other people do. So actually, one of the choices for my last problem set is for students to write a Facebook app, as you just explained it, which I call it the Friday evening app. As they are on Friday evening home, it helps them find among their circle of friends, plus the friends of their friends, those whose gender they correspond to and who are of the gender they are interested in seeking and who are single. So basically, with the relevance function, it shows them, well, you know, here are the single people who are interested in you and you're potentially interested in them, and this is how you can chat them up. So that's a good example of people actually revealing lots of information about themselves without potentially knowing that down the road it might be of interest to other people who you might not be thinking of at the time.
Well, that's right. I've often wondered, for example, what if Facebook had existed 20 years ago in China when Falun Gong was being created and or any other organization. And as you probably know, some years after that, the communist government in China made the organization illegal, tried to round up its members. Well, what if an organization like that, the Chinese in, or the Burmese government today with the monks or the German, the Nazi government in Germany, what if those organizations had had something like the Facebook network in order to round up people? Guilt by association will be taken to an entirely new level, and I hate to say this, but it is going to happen in the future. These are stories from the past about before the time we had social networks, but now that we have them and all the technologies we build for cool things like finding someone to have a date with on Friday night, these applications will be used in Saudi Arabia, in China, in Korea, in other countries as time goes on, and these kind of things will happen. How much fun is it worth to have on your conscience that you enabled something like that?
Yeah. So more of this discussion we'll have in class on June 2nd, 3:15 p.m. And I'm very, very grateful, Brad, that you had this conversation with me and that you'll be coming to class in 2 weeks from now.
We'll see you then.